Well, good evening, good morning, good afternoon. Welcome to our Big Book 12-Step Workshop. My name is Herb. I'm an alcoholic. Please join me in our set-aside prayer, and please remember to set aside your prior set-aside prayer, because we're using the new one with unmanageability. You're welcome to pray any way you want. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my unmanageability, the 12 steps in you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my unmanageability, the 12 steps, and especially you. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. We're on step two. Came to believe. It's a choice about power. We started chapter four with a recap, looking back at step one. And we saw and experienced powerless, hopefully in a broader, deeper way than you've ever experienced before, certainly with regard to your addiction, but more especially with regard to your unmanageability. Regardless of your abstinence, regardless of your relationship with your addiction, our inability to navigate our own lives, reality as we perceive it, effectively. Restless, irritable, and discontent. I do what I don't want to do, and I don't do what I want to do. And you looked at, the very first assignment was looking at your belief. What is it that you actually believe? And then how do you actually behave in contrast to what you actually believe? Many of you have expressed an experience with that. Is there a power greater than ourselves? What does it mean to be restored to sanity? Is God necessary? Is there a power that is necessary? Is it necessary? Is it available? Is really the question. A decision about power. I haven't asked you yet to make that decision, although tonight I will be asking you to do that. A faith decision. Next Tuesday, I plan on spending the entire time not teaching, which is the normal protocol, but having dialogue with as many people as want to about what their understanding is, what their experience is, what their questions are. Finishing up assignment nine and preparing for assignment, finishing up assignment eight and preparing to start assignment nine. I'll give that instruction toward the end of our time tonight. A faith decision. We encountered the beginnings of it on page 47. Bill talked about willingness. willingness to even pray the set-aside prayer, even if you're an agnostic, an atheist, or you don't even know what you are, but willing to at least mouth the words or have the thoughts, have the intention of an open mind and an open heart. Bill says that's the cornerstone that opens this curtain just a crack so the light can come in. This willingness. Or a willingness to be willing, even. It might be remote. But we saw that that is the cornerstone. A decision about my concept. We came to page 53. And Bill asks us, key question. God is or God isn't, what is your choice? What is this organismic life force that flows through the universe that brings an acorn to a sapling? Who is God for me? Not in the textbook, not in my religion, not in my sponsor, not even in the big book. Please, not even in the big book. Is it an infinite, immaterial being? Bill says in page 55, the answers to the question, where and how are we going to find this power? He has two paragraphs there on page 55. Search fearlessly, search diligently, think honestly, deep down inside. That's a recap of those two paragraphs. He says it differently in each, but the one paragraph is almost an echo of the other paragraph with different words. Both of them confirming how, searching and thinking. Both of them confirming where, deep inside. And that's the only place this energy, this life force, this organismic dynamic that is impossible for us to name, because look at that phrase, infinite, beyond our capability to put into words, immaterial. In fact, it has no substance, it has no image, there are no words for it. Do you believe it's fully present? Bill said on page 53, God is or God isn't, that's about its existence. From a different perspective, he says God is everything or God is nothing. Whatever this reality is with a capital R, if it is, it's the only thing that is. I mean, that's somewhat logical. It's certainly theological. We would like to think that there's a consciousness here, an awareness, a self-awareness. I can't even go there. That's way beyond the big book's parameters. Many of us talk about unconditional love. We're looking for help. What does unconditional mean? Oh, that would mean no conditions. You see, there's no hoops to jump through. There's no right or wrong. There's no reward or punishment. Unconditional. Well, of course, if this reality is everything, it doesn't need anything. I mean, at least my human logic can handle that. I still don't know what unconditional means, but I can back into it from knowing what it isn't. It isn't conditional. That's my only experience, of course, with human affection or human connection is conditional. We have as a vision or an ideal unconditional in human affection. That's nice. It's just not attainable. Because by nature, we are material, finite beings in contrast to what is on the board there. We're not fully present. We're very distracted. We can't be everywhere and know everything. In fact, we know very little, and that's part of our problem. I didn't know that I didn't know. The ultimate of ignorance that creates my suffering. I looked up the word altruism in pursuit of what does love mean. It's a overused word in our English language anyway. And it could refer to your car or your dog or your coffee or your job or yourself or your spouse or your partner or your children, each one of them having a completely different, somewhat different anyway, meaning. I looked up the word, some words in the dictionary that meant doing something for the benefit of somebody else with no possible benefit for me, altruism. Altruism. That's as close as I think I can come to understanding this kind of relationship with this energy of the universe. If it exists, it's kind of a meditation. I asked you to take a look at pages 9 through 16 in the 12 and 12. Excuse me, in the big book, Bill's the final part of Bill's story. He meets Evie Thatcher, page 9. He's sitting at the table with him. At least this is the story in the big book. It's a good story. I hope it's true. It doesn't matter. Bill was very impressed with Ebby because Ebby was sober. And he manifested it by just his very presence. You may have heard the phrase, I believe it's attributed to Augustine from the 4th century, wherever you are, preach the good news. If you have to, use words. See, Evie didn't have to use words. When Bill met him at the door, his eyes were glowing bright and his skin was clean and fresh and he smelled good and he looked good and he talked with a sense of humility and confidence. Starry-eyed look, he says on page 9, on fire. He did no ranting, simple religious idea and a practical program of action. A religious idea, well, that's the words they had at the time, a relationship with God, a relationship with power. Something interceded and pulled him out of hell. A practical program of action. I mentioned the Oxford Group, 6 steps on page 263. I hope you have put a mark on that and read those. They're kind of the background for us to understand where Bill and Bob and Ebby and Roland Hazard, all these people at the very, very beginning of this recovery. He had come to pass his experience along to me, the bottom of page 9, if I cared to have it. Well, that's the model for a 12-step call. Be a witness if they want to stop drinking or get better. Bill, he says on page 10, was hopeless. But he reflected on some of the experience and knowledge that he had when he was growing up with his grandfather, What he didn't believe in was a God personal to me, he says right at the bottom of page 10. He says he got irritated and his mind snapped shut against a personal God. So Bill is writing chapter 4 from personal experience of an agnostic and maybe even partial atheist. Page 11, Bill hears it because he's hopeless. God had done for Ebby what Ebby could not do for himself. His human will had failed. Doctors had must have been incredible. Society was about to lock him up. He admitted complete defeat, and he had been raised from the dead. He's talking about a miracle here as he's seeing it, using his words. Suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of better than the best he had ever known. Here sat a miracle at the bottom of it. On page 12, he thinks about his prejudice, but he liked the concepts, these general universal concepts. Listen to this, synonyms here. Page 12, creative intelligence, universal mind, spirit of nature. And in their conversations, Bill challenged it, the religious idea. He confronted Ebby, and Ebby had this incredible response. It's in italics here on page 12. Bill, why don't you choose your own conception of God? I listened to a tape of Ebby tell that story. And the person who was interviewing him said, so where did you come up with that? And Ebby said, that was the teaching of the Oxford group, which just shocked me. My understanding of the Oxford group is a fundamentalist Christian evangelical organization. Very exclusive, not inclusive. And yet Ebby says their attitude was, each person got to choose. It didn't need to be the Christian dogma. Choose your own conception of God. At least that's Ebby Thatcher's own words. I heard them in an interview. And then Bill says that melted the ice. That's why I use the term thawing out. I got that metaphor from Bill here on page 12. And in italics, he says, it was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required for me to make a beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point upon a foundation of complete willingness. Well, willingness means action. Last night, we had a conversation about this, and one of our participants talked about being told by his sponsor to pray. And this man said, I don't believe. He said, that's okay. Do you believe in me? And the guy said, well, yeah. Well, then take direction and you pray every day. And the man at that time suggested that he get on his knees, not to get God's attention, but to get his own attention, an act of humility, an action symbolically indicating surrender. And this man did that. And after about 3 months, he realized that he was still sober and that his life was getting better. And he worked the steps and formed his own relationship. But my point is, he acted contrary to his thinking, contrary to his feeling, contrary to his inclination, because he was hopeless. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. He said, the scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. This is Bill talking now. And then he's reminiscing about his prior experiences and when he was over in Europe in World War I. So he'd had an experience that opened his heart up to the possibility in that cathedral. But he says on the top of page 13, worldly clamors distracted him. Of course, as soon as he left the cathedral, he left that experience, picked up his drinking again. But now he's in the hospital for the third time this year, December of 1934. And he came in drunk on December 11th. On December 12th, page 13 here, this first day, this guy visits him again. I humbly offered myself to God. All right, this is comparable to our third step, of course. You can match it up with the steps of the Oxford group. Bill is writing this at the time that he's writing the big book, okay? I don't know whether he's completed chapter 5, how it works yet or not. So he's not actually very clear about the 12-step process as he's even writing this, perhaps. I'm not sure of the chronology. I admitted for the first time that of myself, I was nothing, that without this power, I was lost. He had completely collapsed. We saw that on page 8 at his bottom. I ruthlessly faced my sins. Well, that's the language of the Oxford group at the time. He's done a fourth step. And became willing to have my newfound friend, capital F, this is God as he didn't understand it at that point, second day of hospitalization. My schoolmate visited me, Ebby Thatcher came, and he gave him his confession. I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. Right then, we made a list of people I'd harmed, the 8-step list, and he's committing to make it right when he gets out of the hospital. I was to write all such matters to the utmost of my ability. He talks a little bit about meditation, testing my thinking with God consciousness, sitting quietly, asking for direction and strength. That's certainly the summary of the description of step 11 on pages 85 to 88. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my creator. There's a synonym Bill is using with a capital C. I would have the elements of a way of living. That's a term Bill uses for 10, 11, and 12, 20 different times in the big book, which answered all my problems, not just my alcoholic problem, my problems with reality, my problems with life, my unmanageability, my bedevilment problems. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility. The same recap is in Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. Willingness, honesty, open-mindedness. To establish, page 14, and maintain a new order of things, which were the essential requirements. Simple, but not easy. This is my favorite phrase. You've heard me refer to it several times, and I will continue throughout the year because it's powerful. This is a summary, Reader's Digest version of conversion and of the purpose of the process. Simple, but not easy. A price has to be paid. It meant the destruction of self-centeredness, AKA unmanageability, the spiritual malady. And how does that happen? I must turn. That's step 3, a commitment to turn. And steps 4 through 9 are the turning. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light, wonderful synonym, who presides over us all. Revolutionary and drastic proposals. The effect was electric. So this is his third day of hospitalization, December 14th, I believe, 1934. There was a sense of victory followed by such a peace and serenity as I had never known. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though a great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. That's why he called it a spiritual experience. The first writing of the big book, 12 steps, especially step 12, having had a spiritual experience, but he changed that in the second printing and put Appendix 2 in the back of the book, 1941, because he knew that most people don't have that. They have a much toned down experience, like the dimmer switch, rather than the light switch. But his insight is profound. Not only did he know that he had been permanently changed and alcohol was removed, he knew it intuitively. How do you do that on the third day of hospitalization when he's still detoxing? This is a very profound, at the core of his biology and psychology, change. But he also had the second insight that he needed to carry this message to other people. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly, it was imperative to work with others. Faith without works is dead. If an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink. If he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. And we looked at that paragraph when we saw Jim's story, because in that story, there's lots of indications as to why Jim relapsed several times while doing the steps. But the key phrase that we focused on, he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. He wasn't helping other people. Bill and Lois abandoned themselves to helping other alcoholics. That they made a vocation out of it, as well as an avocation. That was their life's, Bill's life's work, certainly, and Lois supported him. Work with another alcoholic would save the day when he was depressed. He would go to the hospital to help somebody, and he was in despair, depression, deep depression. But when he left after trying to help somebody, he was lifted up and set up on his feet. He calls it a design for living. He refers to meetings at the bottom of the page. We meet frequently so that newcomers may find fellowship. At these informal gatherings, they were at home meetings like the Oxford group. They had lots of people just to discuss what was going on. In another area, they talk about they held a formal meeting once a week so that newcomers could bring their problems. We don't take ourselves seriously, but we take the program and the disease very seriously. ...24 hours a day in and through us, faith. Well, faith is that decision that there is this power. That's the whole point of step two. So my bottom line on this slide is an uncreated, creative reality. Whatever this is, this power, it wasn't created, because if it was created, then whatever created it would be, in fact, the God of our not understanding. Very interesting. In the 12 and 12, Bill refers to the sanity again. Came to believe this power can restore us to sanity. And we saw that in Jim's story, page 37, proportionate thinking. In the 12 and 12, he refers to it a couple times on page 33 in chapter 2, all about step 2. I read it today. Again, wonderful chapter in which Bill says, an open mind. Take a look at the results of the people in the room. And he said, if in fact you can't believe in or make a decision about any type of traditional power, higher power, God, as we don't understand it, choose the group. It's brilliant. Because the group has what you want, freedom from their addiction, and a life that apparently flourishes most of the time. Look at the results of the people and use the group as the higher power. Sanity, he defines as soundness of mind, versus the defiance that is the hallmark of addicts, and humility, which is the antidote to that defiance. I need help to have a relationship with people. I need help to have a relationship with this amorphous concept of God as I don't understand it. We looked at Appendix 2 when we first started this journey because we wanted to know what a spiritual awakening was. Bill gives us a description of a spiritual experience and a spiritual awakening, as I mentioned in Appendix 2, because he changed Step 12 in that second printing in 1941. The spiritual experience is like a light switch. Boom, it's on. Boom, it's off. Whereas a spiritual awakening is like a dimmer switch. Very slow, very gradual. We might not even know that the lights are getting bright. We might not even know that I'm being changed until maybe somebody observes it, or in fact, down the road, we look back over our shoulder and we observe it. He says in Appendix 2, page 567, it's a personality change. Both of them, spiritual experience and spiritual awakening, are the same product. It's just a different time frame. They both produce a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. The spiritual awakening, as William James calls it, he quotes him here as the educational variety developing slowly over a period of time. But the commonality of both of them and the promise of the 12-step process in that last paragraph on page 567, we undergo a profound alteration in our reaction to life, and that this change could hardly have been brought about by myself alone. And then he has this great phrase that is overlooked many times that I'll bring to your attention probably throughout the year because it's so reinforcing of step two. At the bottom of page 567, unsuspected, we go over to 568, unsuspected inner resource. Unsuspected. Despite the fact I had all that training in the monastery, I didn't really understand this power as a reality deep down inside of me, as a resource that was inside of me. He says, inner resource. And then this wonderful phrase that's, again, very overlooked in the rooms. Awareness of the power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Takes a minute. The essence is awareness of this power. The essence is an awareness, not a thought, not a certitude, not a feeling, just this awareness. Think of step 11, improve my conscious contact. We're talking about awareness, not certitude, not a thought, not accurate description, not a defined word, certainly not a feeling. It's great to have a feeling, but as we know, feelings come from biochemical reactions based on our perception. They can be positive, our feelings. They can be negative, our feelings. And they can be neutral. There can be no feeling at all. This spiritual life is not connected to feelings essentially. In fact, feelings are a trap in the spiritual life, especially for addicts who like to feel good all the time and avoid feeling bad. We need to honestly face our problems in the light of our experience. We can recover, provided we do not close our mind to spiritual concepts. We can be defeated, he says, by intolerance or belligerent denial. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are essentials of recovery. Indispensable. I looked those words up. Essential makes a thing what it is, the essence, unique, special element, absolutely necessary, required for normal health and growth, intrinsic. I looked up indispensable. Absolutely necessary, no exemption, not to omit or forego. Pretty significant stuff. We left off looking at the Big Book, Chapter 4, on page 55, where Bill answers those two questions that he posed on page 45. Where and how are we going to find this power? With this attitude, search diligently, search fearlessly, think honestly. Coming out of those two paragraphs, those two echo paragraphs. You can join us on this broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. What attitude is that? As I mentioned, the attitude of a sail and the mast on a sailboat sets it up to catch the wind to power the boat. With this attitude, thinking honestly, with an open mind, searching diligently, with some sense of detail, searching fearlessly, that is, taking the risk, stepping out into the chasm, this leap of faith that is our invitation in step three. He is setting us up now for step three. Step two is a decision about power. Oh, it exists. Or at least I'm going to choose that it does, and I'm going to act like it does. See, that's faith. Faith is the decision that prompts you to go into action. Faith without works is dead. Faith without action is fantasy, said the man who took me through the steps. Then he tells us another story, page 56. It sounded like Bill for a minute. I think it's our Southern Friend story in the back of the book, one of the early stories. But this guy has a similar experience to Bill Wilson, doesn't he? He's an alcoholic. And he's in a hospital. And he's pissed. He's depressed. He's in full despair. Our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out. Volcanic. If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. The classic victim stance of an addict and or lots of other people. But then when he got quiet, he asked himself this question. Is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong? He's in such desperation that he's grabbing for that flimsy reed. While pondering the answer, see, he's in meditation now. He doesn't know he's in meditation because, of course, he doesn't believe in God. He's in his discernment. A thunderbolt, a great thought came. Now, this wasn't his thought as he is hearing it, thinking it, experiencing it. Who are you to say there is no God? this man recounts that he tumbled out of bed to his knees. In a few seconds, he was overwhelmed by a conviction of the presence of God, very similar to Bill's spiritual experience. It poured over and through him with the certainty and majesty of a great tide at flood, high tide. The barriers he had built through the years were swept away. He stood in the presence of infinite power and love. He had stepped from bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his Creator. See, now he's preparing us for step three here, this decision to have a relationship, to step from the bridge to the shore. This leap of faith of the 19th century existentialist philosophers. Thus, our friend's cornerstone was fixed in place. You see the internal integrity, again, back to the spiritual arch through which we walk to a new freedom, and this willingness to believe as the cornerstone, that first stone placed on the foundation that sets the direction of the entire structure. No later vicissitude. That means suffering. That means life's challenges, the white water of the flow of the river. Vicissitude, difficulty has shaken it. His alcoholic problem was taken away. See, that's the promise on pages 84 and 85 after we finish the ninth step. Bill is very clear. These are the words. We are placed in a position of neutrality. Hear the grace, hear the freedom, placed in a position of neutrality. Doesn't mean he's not tempted, all right? He has the thought, but he doesn't have the obsession. Listen to his distinctions here. Save for a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of a drink had never returned, has never returned. He has temptation, but not the obsession. A great revulsion. He cannot put his hand on the hot stove anymore, where he used to put his hand on the hot stove, not remembering that it burned him. This is now sanity. At the end of step two, chapter four, Bill is talking about the return to sanity. That is the freedom from the obsession. Listen to this sentence again, overlooked by many. Seemingly, he could not drink even if he would. Awkward language, maybe a little bit, but think about that. Seemingly, Bill's not going to say black and white. He could not drink even if he wanted to. You're powerless. You can't drink if you want to. You can't not drink if you don't want to. Seemingly, he could not drink even if he wanted to. God had restored his sanity, his healthy thinking, his healthy perspective, his soundness of mind. He calls it a miracle of healing. Circumstances made him willing to believe. Well, we got our heads kicked in by our addiction. Yes, that prepares us to surrender in complete defeat and be open to something that might have some promise of helping. He humbly offered himself to his maker. That's step three again. He's preparing us. One step is integrated with the next step. God restored us all to our right minds. That's that sanity again. This man's revelation was sudden spiritual experience. Most of us grow into it slowly, spiritual awakening. Here's the promise, the final promises, the final two promises of step two. God has come to all who have honestly sought God. But hear the condition. Bill had it twice in the answer on page 55. Search diligently, search fearlessly. An act of our will, an act of our faith that gets translated into action. the second promise here at the end on page 57. When we drew near to God, God discloses God's self to us. I'm making it gender neutral. I think it has a better sound to it in today's culture. When we drew near, hear the condition. Again, an act of our will that's translated into action. God will disclose God's self to us, like that man who shared last night. After 3 months of getting on his knees and praying, all of those actions which he didn't like and didn't want and didn't believe in, he found himself having a relationship with something. So finish up assignment eight, and come up with your thoughts about God as you understand it, God as you don't understand it. Don't be inhibited by or intimidated by step two or by the words, God as I understand it. I don't understand God today. And I've spent a lot of time noodling on it, reading about it, meditating about it. But I have a model here that captures. I asked you to look up those words, immanent and transcendent. Transcendent is that circle that encompasses all reality. Are we human beings seeking a spiritual experience? Or are we spiritual beings seeking a human experience? Yes. Immanence, the circle in the middle of the triangle. You may or may not know that that outer circle and the inner triangle is the symbol of AA. It's the logo they used for several years. We don't anymore because of all the litigation that was going on with it. They released it to the public domain. But Al-Anon, when they created Al-Anon, inverted the symbol. They have the triangle with the circle inside. It's a beautiful awareness of our history to see the integration of both those symbols. As I quoted Thomas Merton, a Trappist monk, he said, God is that reality that has no circumference and whose center is everywhere. That's what we're talking about. Unfortunately, the slide doesn't translate as well on the screen. It has, underneath that, it has spirit everywhere in kind of a flag in the wind waving motion, which my artist put there as just the sense of the flow. I hope this helps in terms of coming to grips with step two, came to believe. Some of you may not have this experience in step two or three, but I guarantee you by the time you finish the ninth step, you'll have a different relationship with the power other than yourself than you have right now. But right now it's about your decision. This is the final piece of assignment eight. What attributes and qualities do you want and need this power to have? Want and or need. Now, it's not about making an icon or getting the words right. It's assessing in your soul, in your core of your being. Right now, what do you need? I'm going to ask you a similar question in step three. What relationship do you yearn for? They're different questions. Right now, you're looking at your decision about this reality. Sometime during step three, you'll be looking at a relationship with that, a decision about that relationship. Step three is very clear in the step itself. It says it's a decision to turn. We'll be looking, what does that mean? come to grips with what you need and want in a power other than yourself. And write it out, whether it's a word or a phrase or a paragraph, it doesn't make any difference. It's not about creating the icon that you will worship. That's not the point at all. The material image of a superhuman being, that's not it at all. But as human beings, we do need words and images and symbols. Next week, as I mentioned, we'll be discussing your experience with this process of step two, right from the beginning, what it is that you started with as your belief and how it was challenged, perhaps by looking at your behavior, by your looking at chapter four, three different times. Once from the negative, once from the positive, once from a general reading. And was there much of a difference in the experience? How did it help you, or did you not find it helpful? And how did you find it helpful? Gandhi said, your concept of God will change as you do. It's 100% my experience. On a regular basis, my concept changes. Probably 5-6 years ago, I was using the term mystery because I came to a place where that was the best symbol for me, to keep it just completely ambiguous. Today, I'm using the word, playing with the word in my meditation, in my prayer, in my consciousness. And you've heard me say it, flow with a capital F. The concept of evolution, the concept of life's in session, reality is evolving right around me. Each of us is changing as we even speak in this last hour that we've been together. We've changed just sitting here. We're in the flow. And that's going to be very important as we enter into step three. You're welcome to look at assignment 9 and begin to prepare some of the responses to those items under assignment 9. On the 25th, I'll do a teaching on step three, the beginning teaching, looking at especially pages 58 to 60. And then the following week, taking a look at the balance of the work up to and including page 63. We'll go slow, just like we did with step one, just like we did with step two, trying to have an experience with it, trying to understand it, trying to digest it, mostly have an experience with it.
Thank you.
You bet. So I'm going to invite those of you who have stayed with us to pray. I think I can do this. The prayer of transformation. This is the prayer of St. Francis. This is what we're looking for. This spiritual awakening is the turning from our self-centeredness to something else, other-centeredness, perhaps. Please join me. Lord, make me a channel of your peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Listen to the turning, the process, and also the promises. Lord, Grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one achieves eternal life. Amen. Eckhart Tolle said in The Power of Now, the secret to life is to die before you die and realize there is no death. Pretty profound, and I think it'll have a lot more connotation for you, a lot more meaning for you as we finish this work, especially through steps 4 and 5, which is that death of the false self, that destruction of that self-centeredness that Bill talks about on page 14. Thanks, everybody, very much.